It is 8:34 in the morning. You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks. On Tuesday, on both sides of the bridge, major announcements were made by the city of San Francisco and the city of Oakland about ways in which they want to impact the homelessness crisis in both of those cities. I wanted to dig in with community organizers and advocates about what is happening right now as we've got unhoused community members dealing with an onslaught of rain. What about the community-based proposals and solutions that have been offered up? Where is the city moving with those? And get your reactions to the proposals that were put on the table yesterday or the plans. So I brought in two folks that I know are doing this work and doing it well. We are joined by Zachary Murray, who is a housing policy expert, who joined Oakland Community Land Trust in January as the Advocacy and Partnerships Program Manager. Previously, Zachary worked with Grounded Solutions Network and the Greenlighting Institute, both in Oakland, California. Good morning, Zachary.
Good morning.
And John Jones III, who is the Director of Community and Political Engagement at Just Cities. He is also formerly incarcerated and after paroling was unemployed and unhoused for 18 months. Just as an announcement, we did request an interview with Joe DeVries, an assistant to Oakland City Administrator, who deals with homeless encampments and emergency shelters. He declined the interview. So I want to start actually on the other side of the bridge. I know that's not your stomping ground, but on Tuesday, London Breed announced two pieces of legislation to help impact San Francisco's homeless crisis. One would trigger a state law allowing cities to sidestep securing building permits to build shelters. And the second would seek to speed up the process of hiring contractors to provide homelessness services. The mayor has committed to creating 1,000 new beds for the unhoused community by 2020. But rainy season is here and now, and wondering what the plans are for right now. And I think that this extends to, you know, we had the fires, and there was all of that smoke, and there was a lot of outcry from people on the ground to get people inside. Now it's rain, right? And we're not just talking trickles here. There's a downpouring of rain. John, what is the city doing? What should they be doing?
I mean, to that point, is to me, it's sad that I see how quickly decision makers responded to the fire up north, right? And rightfully so, but it's just disappointing to see a lack of that same quick response to this housing crisis we're experiencing. You know, to have a timeline of 2020 when people need that help now, that to me, it just doesn't sit well with me personally.
Zach?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we should be considering, why don't we have FEMA trailers, right? We have folks who are being put into tool sheds. Why aren't we looking at, like, the emergency do now solutions that can happen? I think also in Oakland, we have the Kaiser Center that's sitting vacant. They're running heating and water through that building, utilities. In the city of San Francisco, they had the armory in the Mission that was vacant for a number of years. And so there are places and solutions to help house people now. I think it's an issue of will.
And I, to that point, there was, you know, Oakland City Council 2 years ago, I believe, directed the staff of the city of Oakland to provide a list of vacant buildings. Staff just didn't do it. During the mayoral campaign, the incumbent, the current mayor, Libby Schaaf, denied that there were any vacant buildings. And so the community put it together. And now there is a list. Am I right, John?
Yes, absolutely. And it goes to show a couple of things. One of the platitudes we like to say is, you know, those who are in close proximity to the issues are really in a better position to come up with the solutions. So if for city staff to not know that there's vacant buildings in Oakland, I think that speaks volumes, that they're really not in close proximity, not only to the issue, but to the city itself. You know, and I always share this as well. You know, if you look at OUSD, there's plenty of vacant buildings. You know, there's vacant plots of land. We really need to really prioritize that. And we haven't. I mean, we're years into this crisis. Years. Not days, not weeks, not months. We're years into it. And we still have not seen a clear plan from the city that would address this.
No, but the people put together a plan, and John, you were part of that coalition, which included the Dillams Institute, Dignity and Housing Now Village, and the Village, that was grounded not only in community-based solutions, but also backed up by United Nations recommendations. In a nutshell, what is the plan? And then we can break into detail, you know.
The plan, long story short, the plan is to basically capitalize on existing resources in a way that would do the most good for people. right? So there's a number of ways that you can help people who are unhoused, right? Whether it's the construction of affordable housing units, which we know is the long end. It's going to take longer.
And when you say affordable, what do you mean?
Let me be clear. Excuse me. Yes, deeply affordable. Because we know a recent report said that low income, you make $100,000, you're considered low income. I don't know where they're getting that from. Because we know most renters, the median income is actually $40,000. So it's very important that we center creating housing that people can afford, but also to creatively utilize existing resources. So like with vacant buildings that can be renovated, with open plots of land, whether that is creating, like what the village has been doing. Right. Creating these community villages that allow people to be sheltered and have access to resources.
Zach, you work with the Oakland Community Land Trust. Talk about long term. That doesn't actually cost gazillions of dollars.
Yeah, well, I think
fairly quickly.
Homelessness didn't just pop up. It's rooted in a crisis of displacement. A lot of the roots of that we're experiencing today is in the foreclosure crisis, where you had 13,000 mostly African-American and Latino homeowners in the city of Oakland, literally block by block in East Oakland and West Oakland, who were foreclosed upon. And so that began what we're experiencing today in terms of homelessness, and we know that the rent crisis has accelerated. And so what the land trust aims to do is to create an alternative form of housing for people that is community-owned, that is community-controlled, that enables ownership, be it cooperative or individual ownership as well, or just providing affordable rents. And so there are a number of things that the city can do to preserve the affordable housing that exists. More than just rent control, it's actually about moving that housing out of the speculative market and ensuring that it's permanently affordable.
And John, to the point of the report that we were just talking about, how many parcels of land did you all identify that are available for low-income workforce housing?
Yes, I believe, remember serving correctly, I believe there was 18, 19.
And how many units of housing do you think you can, could you put on those?
Oh, I think, I'm trying to remember, I believe somewhere rare, I'm trying to remember.
Here,
excuse me, I'm drawing a blank.
No, you're good. I think actually, I'm looking at it here, the 50 parcels of land that are available. The city owns 30, that which could do 7,300. I'm cheating, y'all. I have the paper.
Okay.
I threw it at John. 7,300 units of affordable housing on those plots of land. And the city of Oakland owns 36 of those parcels of land that are suitable for building housing. Not all public land is suitable for housing. Why do you think, John, the city is not moving on this?
I think there's a ulterior motive on behalf of the city. I really think that there is a desire to reshape the city. And what I mean by that is when you think about what Donald Trump says, make America great again. For me, I read that as make America white again. I'm seeing that here in Oakland. What I'm seeing is, and you look at the history of Oakland, it's kind of like there is a plan to get rid of the quote unquote undesirables. But they're not going to come out and name that explicitly. So they're going to use rhetoric like, oh, in order to alleviate the housing crisis, then we must center the creation of market rate housing. And that would ease the demand on the lower income units. That's not true. That's like Reaganomics. You know, you can't do trickle down. So that's just not only my personal opinion, but just my professional perspective of working with city staff for nearly 2 years.
And I'm not trying to be funny or petty, I promise, but it did come to light during the most recent mayoral election that the incumbent's slogan in 2014 was "Make Oakland Safe Again." Zach, why do you think the city is not moving to better support organizations like the Oakland Community Land Trust or work that Just Cities, the Dellums Institute, the Village, et cetera, are doing?
Well, I think I'll say this, that there's a start. Right, that there's resources that have been made available due to bond measures and due to other attention and effort that community has, I think, created. But, you know, we've been dealing with the city on the public land process, on creating a policy to ensure that public land is prioritized for affordable housing and that the people have a say in what happens on that land. And we still haven't received from the city a map listing where the public land assets are. Right. And so I don't feel that they've been dealing in earnest. What they decided to do instead of engaging the people on a plan for all the land is to take the parcels that they think are important and to decide what's going to happen there to exempt two plots in downtown Oakland from any affordability requirements. Right. And so we know East 12th was started because people had a really strong mindset that public land should be used for public good. And so the city has not wanted to create really comprehensive policies that address this type of crisis. And the reality is that when we say affordable housing, we're really referring only to one type of housing, and that's usually low-income housing, tax credit finance housing, that basically you're required to remain low-income in order to reside in.
Let's break down. So the city says we don't have any money. Right. We can't do all this. It costs too much money. Break down some of the new revenue streams that communities should be looking to and holding the city accountable for using to deal with this crisis.
That's right. And I always call for the city to provide a lot more political and economic education about these funding sources. So the city passed in, I believe it was 2016, Measure KK, which was an infrastructure bond of $600 million. $150 million of that went to affordable housing. And so we had the first allocation of that, and there's about half of that money left, I think. And then the county passed a $600 million bond, Measure A1, for affordable housing. That money is beginning to move now. The state just recently passed a $4 billion bond for affordable housing. This is great, right? But the problem is that we're only really paying for one type of affordable housing. And the reality is that we're not going to produce our way out of this crisis. You're not going to build, even with $4 billion, enough housing to get us out of the crisis. And so much more attention has to be dedicated to preventing displacement where it exists. And that's in the vulnerable housing stock in places like East Oakland, where landlords are coming in and raising rents overnight from $1,200 to $2,400 and forcing tenants out, saying, I'm going to come in and do a rehabilitation and bring in new tenants. And that's where the displacement threat exists. But we don't have resources at any scale, state, local or federal, that really address where that that crisis is.
You know, I think about that a lot. I purchased my house with the help of my family and the grace of God in 2009 in West Oakland. And I purchased my house for $150,000. And I was a single working mother at the time. I mean, that's an unheard of price now. And I've talked a lot about survivor's guilt. But in addition to my survivor's guilt was the question that why was there not a government entity that was looking at this rock bottom pricing, right? Nobody on our city council that then reached out to single women of color, folks coming home from jail, like our most marginalized communities to help them have, you know, to help them get these homes. We would have nipped gentrification in the bud right there. John, there's a lot of talk you hear from both city government, but also some more, you know, some other liberals in the city of Oakland about, oh, it's not the city of Oakland's fault. It's not their problem. It's the county's problem. What do you say to that?
I feel like that's basically passing the buck. If we look at what's happening here today in Oakland, this housing crisis really is a result of policies and decisions that were made during World War II. So just real quickly, you know, Oakland 1940 was 95% white. We had World War II. A war was going on. Over 100,000 people moved into Oakland during that decade. But there never was a real plan to keep them here. They were brought in as cheap labor to work on shipbuilding, the food cannery, et cetera, et cetera. So at that point in time, a couple of things began to happen. They began to keep people in certain areas, West Oakland, certain zip codes. The federal government is complicit because when FHA came out with their loans, they made sure that black and brown people didn't have access to that. So we didn't have an opportunity to build equity, to build wealth. So then you get to, as Zach mentioned, when you get to like the housing crisis of 08, that to me was wealth stripping. People who put their savings up and then they had the adjustable rate mortgage, the predatory lending practices. And it's interesting that the same entities who were responsible for that were the ones who benefited from a bailout. And then a lot of these realtors were coming in and they were buying a lot of these houses and they were taking it off the market. So there's a lot of myths out there. The fact that people say there's not enough units, that's not true. I know personally there are vacant units, but it's capitalism, right? When you have less available, then that means the price goes up. So the city is responsible because the city passed these housing covenants. They passed these racist discriminatory practices. Number two, Oakland should have forecast that the population would have grown. I mean, we have the best weather in the country. We're in close proximity to two of the most prestigious universities in the world. We're next door to San Francisco. It was inevitable. It was inevitable that the population would grow. I think there's a lack of vision. And the last thing I'll add is this. When it comes to negotiating with developers, I think our decision makers have this default mentality. It's like Oakland has this reputation of being San Francisco's ugly little step sibling. Right. So we're a little bit thirsty, meaning people want to come to Oakland now and we're like, yay, we want development. But they really don't have the savvy to deal with these folks. And they're just giving away the house. We see it time and time again. Parcels land, they're giving away for pennies on a dollar. And they're saying, well, we need development. I'm like, no, we need to value ourselves and value our people. Like that movie said, if you build it, they will come, but it should be on our terms for our benefit and not to the benefit of these outside developers.
You're listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks. I am in studio with Zachary Murray, a housing policy expert with the Oakland Community Land Trust, and John Jones, who is the Director of Community and Political Engagement at Just Cities. So the same day that Mayor London Breed announces her two proposals to address San Francisco's housing and homeless crisis, Kaiser Permanente, on the steps of Oakland City Hall with Mayor Libby Schaaf, announced a new and large investment in solving California's housing crisis in Oakland that looks like the purchase of a building in East Oakland to keep 49 units below market rate, and a promise to take 500 people off the streets through more housing and support services. I wanted to ask you, Zach, your reactions to the proposal, good, bad, somewhere in between. Are they working with community groups on the ground that are focused on getting our most marginalized populations housed?
I guess my reaction is definitely mixed, somewhere in between. I feel that it's good that a private, you know, corporation, even though Kaiser's a nonprofit, is stepping up into this space of saying that we have to play a role in providing affordable housing, making commitments specifically to the homeless population, I think is important, and centering them in policies. That said, the devil is always in the details, specifically when it comes to affordable housing finance. And so what we're seeing is that corporations that are making massive profits, that are getting tax cuts, that are adding to their cash reserves, right, are lending money at market rate to create affordable housing. These are
So the Kaiser proposal is a loan?
Yeah, it's equity. Basically, what it does is it provides access for affordable housing developers to short-term capital. One of the main issues is that when you pass a bond, it takes time to actually get access to that revenue. And so this is like, in a sense, kind of like bridge capital, which is a loan that's up to 10 years, as I understand it, that will be paid down by government debt. And so it's still taxpayers who are ultimately on the hook for paying down for these investments. These are loans at market rate.
I want you to say that one more time for the folks in the back like me who are following maybe a little bit more slowly. Because when I read it, I was like, oh, dope. Kaiser just gave the city of Oakland this much money. Or really, it gave it to these residents. But what I hear you saying is that Kaiser loaned the city of Oakland money?
Yeah, so for the bulk of that $100 million, it's a loan fund that will be managed by Enterprise Community Partners, right? Enterprise is bringing $50 million of capital to the fold, and I believe Kaiser's adding another additional $50 million. That's going to be money that's going to lead to affordable housing production. It'll be in the form of loans, maybe lower than market rate, but loans, essentially, for affordable housing developers that'll be paid down within 10 years, hopefully, by taxpayer dollars, right? The measures, the bonds, the affordable housing revenue that's generated to pay for affordable housing that we don't have access to now. So it's helping to move along the production, but it's not really addressing it. And I want to add one more point to this, which is that the same day that Kaiser made this announcement, Microsoft really stole their thunder by announcing in Seattle that they're giving $500 million, $500 million. But when you dig into the details again, $275 million of that is market rate loans for affordable housing. Affordable housing isn't market rate, so how can they pay a market rate of lending? You're charging them the same interest rates that you're charging everybody else when they're providing a good. We know that with Trump's tax cuts, Microsoft stands to benefit to the tune of billions, right, in what they're going to save. They have $135 billion in cash reserves. Right. They could easily lend $1 billion of that at 0% interest. Right. And end up in the same position, especially after this year, if not a better position because of what they're saving on taxes. And so it's really important when we're thinking about affordable housing finance, which is a very undemocratic institution, if we're really speaking about it, right, that we understand the details. This money mainly will leverage low-income housing tax credits, which are government subsidies to charities that provide affordable housing. Right. One form of affordable rental that requires that you stay at the same income level. Right. And once you move above that AMI level, you're out. And if you move above the AMI in Oakland, where do you go? You can't move into the market rate if you're making even 80% AMI. Right.
So what is AMI for our listeners?
Area median income. And so a lot of the housing is defined. And I think as John was raising earlier, the bulk of the need is at 30% area median income and below. And in Alameda County, we're at about $95,000 is the area median income. San Francisco is well above 100 at this point. And so the tech companies and the large corporations are skewing incomes in the region to the right. And so we're creating a lot of benefits in terms of tenant protections and these new renter units that are missing where the bulk of the need is, right, is that the prices have already run away and folks don't have access in the first place to the region.
I want to ask one more clarifying question because you mentioned that taxpayers will be paying back this bond, mm-hmm. I mean this loan, excuse me, that Kaiser has provided. But then you mentioned the bonds that we just passed. So mm-hmm. we passed, it was Measure X, I believe. There are a few bonds that were put on the ballot that were supposed to then go into the general fund, mm-hmm. but we were promised that it would deal with housing. So at least a portion of that money, based on what you're saying, is already spoken for this loan, or am I interpreting that wrong?
Well, basically, if I could just, again, it's a complex system, and so just let me give a second to explain. Most of affordable housing is financed through the federal government's low-income housing tax credit program, right? About 90% comes from that one source, which provides about 90% to 40% of a specific development's financing, right? And so the state funding that is provided and the city funding really aims to leverage that federal funding, which has a bunch of regulations and statutes and requirements, right? Again, taxpayer money that's being given to corporations to finance affordable housing. It's extremely complex. But again, it leaves us in a very limited way where we're still stuck in the market's mechanisms for producing affordable housing, where government has really given away its responsibility, right? And they have totally eliminated public housing, really, from the discussion. They've totally eliminated government's sole responsibility for providing safe, affordable housing and have put it into the hands of the private sector, be it nonprofits and in some cases, many cases, for-profit businesses who conduct the development and the financing. And the how that relates to Oakland is that low-income housing tax credit financing requires that you're building at a scale of 50 units. 88% of Oakland's housing stock is under 25 units. And so where the bulk of our displacement threat exists in those medium-sized, small, you know, 8-unit, 4-unit buildings, right, there's actually no source of affordable housing financing at the state, local, or federal level to secure and preserve that housing. And what we have is most of the money goes to production of these 100-unit buildings, right, that are at best in Oakland about 55 years is their requirement for affordability. There's no guarantees beyond that, really, and no funding lined up to ensure that it goes beyond that.
Don Jones, in our last 45 seconds, where do we go from here?
First, real quickly, I want to say, you know, I want to offer my thoughts and prayers and condolences to the individual who died last night.
Dunhouse man,
and the tree fell on him. So I'm still dealing with that. Where we go from here, we got to reclaim what I call our shared humanity. It starts there. Housing is a human right, and it should be nothing less than that. Anything outside that is not going to get to it. I don't want to hear no excuses. I don't want to hear about a lack of funds. That's a given. Just as a parent would make sure their child is taken care of with no excuses, we got to do that for each other. And the last thing I want to add is this, just how poor people and people of color have been marginalized by systemic violence and they're suffering from that through no fault of their own. The same thing is true for the formerly incarcerated population. We must remember that the fastest growing prison population by demographic are black women, by race that are Asian Americans. The impact on children, family reunification, that also is impacting this housing instability crisis.
We have been speaking to Zachary Murray, a housing policy expert with the Oakland Community Land Trust. Thank you for joining me, Zachary. And with John Jones III, the Director of Community and Political Engagement in Just Cities. Thank you, John. The report is Housing Oakland's Unhoused. You can find it on the Dellums Institute website. And that does it for today's show.